Let me just show you in my lab how useful a technique like this can be. So we're still using 10nbtib. Just to remind you where we came from. We're still using 10nbtib just as before. And for now, I'm still dealing with the unpacked version of 10nbtib. Because later on today, I'm going to talk about how to deal with the packed version. And my system is infected with this thing, but what I should have done before infecting it is created this entry, 192, 168. So now malware on my system should be able to contact the infected, my Linux virtual machine. Ping malware course.sends.org. All right, so none of this is new, right? Now, how did we crack the backdoor? We set a breakpoint on string comparison to see what password it expects, but there's another technique that I wanted to show you. Let's go to that code section that we're already familiar with. So to show you this familiar code section, actually, let me show it to you on my screen. It'll be easier for you to see. So here's that code section that's already familiar to you. At the bottom, it says pass accepted. We've been focusing on this call to strcomp because that's what allowed us to see what password it's looking for. But there's another way. If we could modify this executable, wouldn't it be nice if we could change it to accept a different password? Or if we can change it to accept any password. How would we do that? Well, if we could modify the code, here's one thing that we could change. Look, it says here push pass accepted. This is the good string that we want to see. Well, what determines whether or not it says pass accepted or not? Ultimately, it's this jump above it. It's a conditional jump that sometimes will jump out of here, which causes the program not to accept our password. We can modify this jump to do something different. We can modify it to never jump at all. In fact, we could just get rid of this instruction altogether. This way, regardless what password we give it, regardless on the result of the strict comparison function, it'll never have a chance to jump away if we got rid of this jump. Does that make sense conceptually? So that's what capabilities you have if you know how to patch the program. How would we patch it? Easy if you have OliDebug. Because here's how you do it in OliDebug. You find the code that you want to patch, like this particular instruction here. So you locate it visually in OliDebug. And here's that strcomp. It happens to be at the address 4020C3. All I need to do to patch it is press the space bar. Let me show it to you on the screen for those of you who are far away. All you need to do is press the space bar after you've highlighted the instruction that you want to modify. And now you've got this window, and into this window, you enter the new instruction. Now, listen, we cannot simply remove instructions that we don't like. That's going to just change the layout of the executable. Things are going to break. We cannot just remove. But we can override. So what I'm doing here is I'm getting rid of this jump by overwriting it with another instruction that's less dangerous to me. And the instruction that many people use is the instruction NOP, NOOP. What does it do? Nothing. Yeah, who knew that an instruction that does nothing could be so useful? Well, what we're going to do is press a space bar and type NOP and then click the assemble button. And that's it. So look at this. Right now we've got this jump. This jump is represented using hex opcodes 7548. Look at what happens when I click assemble. 7548 was changed into 1990, and in place of the jump, we now have two NOOP instructions. Now, regardless of what password I give it, regardless on the result of strcomp, it will never have a chance to jump away, and it's always going to say pass accepted. Pretty neat. Now, why two NOOPs? I really care about one, right? Well, to represent NOOP on Intel x86 platform, the opcode is 90. That's 1 byte. 90 is 1 byte. But we're replacing 2 bytes, 75 and 48. That's why we have kept this option that's enabled by default, and typically you want to keep it this way. There's an option there, check mark, that says fill with NOOPs. This basically tells OliDebug to add additional NOOPs if necessary to maintain the structure of the executable. So even though we really need a single NOOP, OliDebug will automatically add an extra NOAP to maintain the structure of the executable properly aligned. So let's see how this works. So no. All it does is it modifies this one instruction that you have highlighted. That's all. So it's very, very surgical and precise. So I'm going to say NOAP, N-O-P, after I highlighted the jump that I don't like. Click assemble. Now the window still stays up. To get rid of the window, you got to press cancel. It's a little counterintuitive because you might think that cancel actually undoes what you just did. No, cancel just gets rid of the window. The NOAPs are still there. Now, if you wanted to look at the patches that you've implemented, you can press Control P, and it's actually going to show you a window that shows you the patches that you've made. It shows us that we now have a NOAP where we had an old jump. So if you ever want to remember what changes you've implemented, you can press Control P to bring up this patches window. So now that I've modified the code, I can run it, and now it's joining my IRC server. So let's see, does it work? Does ID work? Let me see, clear. ID, this is just my way of making sure that I've got a communication going. And now how about I log into it using a password that I know is incorrect. Ha ha ha. Hey, it says pass accepted. Very cool. And this is very useful in situations where maybe the authentication is not password based. Or maybe it's using a password hash. So you wouldn't really have a password to look for. Well, that's okay, because if you patch the program, you can get it to accept any password. And that's exactly the same technique you would use if you wanted to disable some VMware detection subroutine or some anti-debugger subroutine. The same technique applies, and OliDebug makes it easy. And one more thing that I wanted to show you is that you could actually make this patch permanent. Right now, you've only modified it in memory. What you can do in OliDebug is right-click. Oh boy, so many choices. And you can say, copy to executable all modifications. And you say, copy all. And I have all of this documented in your books. This brings up a new window, and you right-click there, and you say, save file. And now I'm saving my patched version of the executable, tnnbtib-patched. And now if I want to, I can run this one outside of OliDebug. And it's going to accept any password that I want. And this would give me a bit more freedom to experiment with it. If you wanted to confirm that the way you patched it did what you think it does, there's a little utility built into Windows called FC. It stands for file compare. You can file compare the patched file to the one that you did not patch. And it's going to actually compare them. FC is often used to compare two text files, but it can compare two binary files. In this case, FC is saying that in place of 7548 that was there before, that's what represented the jump, I now have 9090. That's my NOAP. In all other respects, the two programs are identical. So that means that I patched it very cleanly. There are no errors there. Well, so what about a malicious program that that even blocks OliDebug from getting opened? So right now, in the example that I showed you, I was able to patch the program before it was running. So the program had no control over me. It did not get a chance to prevent me from opening OliDebug because I patched the program before the program ran. But, of course, there are various ways in which malware can make this a difficult job for us. So on the last day of the class, I have a section called self-defending malware, and I'm going to show you some examples of where malware really tries to make your job hard. So we'll revisit this on the last day of the class. But right now, I wanted to give you some time to try this out in your lab. The instructions for what I just did are in your books, starting on page 9. So this is the second book, starting on page 9. I'll walk you through what I just showed you on the screen. And the instructions take you all the way from page 9 until page 16. So 9 to 16. Try this out. Make sure you know how to patch the program in OliDebug. You don't need to redo any of the steps that we've done in the past. You already have the environments nice and infected, just the way you like it. Terminate the malicious program, load it into OliDebug, patch it up, make sure it can accept any password, and if you get stuck anywhere, let me know and I'll point you in the right direction. let's continue. Is somebody still copying TNNBTIB? I'm not TNNBTIB, Lord PE. All right. I'm going to revisit the idea of patching on the last day of the class, and I'm going to show you some other more less intrusive ways of patching executables, or rather, modifying what they do. Any questions about patching? So let's talk about packed executables at greater depth to give you a better sense of what they are and how to bypass some of their defenses. Here's the idea behind packed executables. So packed, not patched. The malware author is a programmer, not necessarily a specialist in writing code that is difficult to analyze. So they write their code the way they would write any program. But then they want to make it hard for us to analyze their code. So they buy or steal or borrow a program called a packer. What does a packer do? Well, it takes the original program that the attacker created, the compiled executable, and then it knows how to usually compress it, obfuscate it, encrypt it or encode it, and store the result in a brand new program. The original one is stored in a packed form as data, and the new program contains very little assembly code, just enough assembly code that knows how to extract the packed program when it runs on the victim's system. So the packed program is then distributed to the victim, and that's what the victim runs. When the victim executes the packed program, the unpacking code runs, extracts the attacker's original program into memory, and now in memory it is running the way the attacker intended it to run. It is not unlike the way you would create a self-extractable executable using a program like WinZip. Except WinZip extracts the original file onto the file system. In this case, the original file is extracted into memory. So now it's harder for us to have a file that we can analyze. In many cases, the packed program will be smaller than the original one. However, a lot of these packers nowadays add various anti-analysis defenses, and they may add so many of these defenses that the resulting packed program might actually be larger than the original one. And there are a lot of packers. I mean, too many to list in one slide. The ones that came to mind when I was writing, preparing this slide was YesUPX. We already saw that yesterday. Aspect, Petite, Neolite, Thymida. Some of these are commercial tools. Many of them are commercial tools. UPX is the only one that I know of that has built-in native reversal capabilities. All the other ones, you're out of luck. It's a one-way street, supposedly. All you have is the packed executable. If you load it into IDA Pro or into OliDebug, they will not be able to analyze the original program. You might be able to do some analysis of the unpacking code, but this unpacking code is written by somebody who knows how to write code that's difficult to analyze. It's very hard to understand what it does. Very hard to understand that algorithm. Very time-consuming. The original program is what you're after, but it's encrypted as data. So how do we deal with them? Well, one way to start working with a program is to use a tool like PEID. PEID is a free tool that knows how to identify a lot of common packers. How do you use it? Well, it's a GUI tool. Let me show you. You just drag and drop the executable that's packed, and it'll tell you what packer was used, if it can recognize it. So, to continue with our exercises, I'd like to ask you to go back to your DVD and grab the original copy of TNNBTIB, the one that's packed, and let's put it onto your desktop. Because I want to show you how to analyze it in its packed form. So you don't need to revert, but do grab the original executable that's packed and place it onto your desktop. If you drag and drop the packed executable into PID, it's going to scan it, and PID comes with a database of signatures that know how to recognize a lot of common packers. And The PEID that I included on the DVD that I gave you actually includes a very large database of signatures that I came across. It's larger than what you would normally download as part of PEID. It's a pretty comprehensive database of signatures that was updated just a few months ago. So it should be able to recognize the most common packers. And why do we do this? Well, because once you recognize what the packer was, you can research it, and maybe you can find steps that people have created to help you unpack it. If you never heard of UPX, well, you would research it to find out how do I unprotect an executable packed with UPX. One of the ways in which you could also identify a packer, even if PID could not identify it automatically, is if you click on this button next to the section, EP section, if you click on this button, it's going to bring up a section viewer, and the section viewer will show you what sections the executable is comprised of. You see, a Windows executable has several sections. Some of the sections store code, some of the sections store data, some of the sections are just placeholders where data will be placed during runtime. Why am I telling you this in the context of packed executables? Because sometimes the way the sections are named could reveal what packer was used to create the executable. In this case, you see sections named UPX0, UPX1, and UPX2. Guess which packer was used here? Well, probably UPX. Let's say you've identified a packer. Maybe you found some hints for how to unpack it. Or maybe you didn't find any information about it. What are some of the ways for you to unprotect the executable? Because until you unpack it, you'll have a hard time analyzing it at the code level. Well, one is use native traversal if it's possible. Sadly, this is only possible with UPX. The good news is that UPS is pretty popular. So use native reversal if UPX supports it. If not, here are some alternatives. I'm going to show you how to dump an executable that's been unpacked into memory. I'm also going to show you that there are some tools that exist to automate the unpacking process for you. And lastly, perhaps the most powerful route is to debug an executable as it's running, even if you could not dump it to the file system. So that's what I want to show you how to do. And we're going to start off with an excellent tool called LordPE that allows you to dump the malicious executable directly from memory. Let me show it to you on my screen, and then I'm going to give you a chance to play with this in your lab. So what I'm going to do in my lab is to reinfect myself using the original executable from the DVD. It's packed. I'm going to double-click on it, and what it's currently doing, as you may recall, is it's copying itself into the Windows directory and running from there. So right now, I have the infected, the malicious program running in memory. What did it do to do this, to do its bidding? Well, it must have unpacked itself into memory. So in memory, it should be in clear text. It should be visible to me. The tool that I like to use to grab it from memory is called LordPE. LordPE. That's the tool that is on your DVD, and that's the tool that I passed around because on this particular DVD, the tool was partially dismembered by my antivirus tool. So to run LordPE, you just launch it, and it gives you a listing of the processes. You select the process that you want to dump, the malicious one that we care about, tnnbtib, right-click on it and say dump full. It's going to ask you for a file name. I'm going to call it tnnbtib-dumped. You've been dumped, okay? And now I can actually load it into a disassembler. I can actually look at its strings. I can load it into bintext and do some of the analysis that we've been doing yesterday, like identify potential commands that the executable supports. If you try to look at the packed version, you won't see any useful strings, very few useful strings. So that's the beauty of LordPE. The executable unpacks itself into memory. LordPE allows you to grab it from memory, save it to the file system so that you can do some static analysis on it. Any questions about the idea of using LordPE for this purpose?
Now, in the case of LordPE, the stuff that's XORed will still be XORed, right?
So yeah, so in the case of LordPE, whatever was XORed protected, yeah, it'll still be XORed protected because LordPE simply grabs the data from memory, puts it in the file system. Yes, somewhere out there in memory, there could be a clear text version of the XOR protected string, but you still need to figure out where it's located. The job of a tool like LordPE is much more focused. Show me the program that you would have had if the program was unpacked.
How does it dump the stack or dump the heap?
So you're asking how selective is LordPE in determining what to grab out of memory. So I typically use it with dump full, and it dumps all of the, I think, non-DLLs that it sees in memory, though I never fully investigated how it does its magic. It ends up working for me. But you do have some other options to dump specific sections, if you want, specific regions. To tell you the truth, I've never found it necessary to make use of that feature, but it is there if you want to be very surgical about what you're dumping. Yeah. Now, the one negative aspect of the tool is that after you dump it, most likely it will not be runnable. That's because a Windows executable has a header called the PE header that tells Microsoft Windows information about the executable so that it can properly run it. When you dump an executable using LordPE, usually the PE header will be corrupted. I'll show you how to fix this problem. But in most cases, if you do a plain old dump, it will not be runnable, but you can still do static analysis on it. So give that a try. I have the instructions for how to do this in your books on page 27. In this case, I'm assuming that UPX-D did not work. Let's say it did not work. Reinfect yourself with the packed version of the executable, keep it running in memory, and then dump it using LordPE. Then look at its strings to confirm that the strings, like commands, are now visible to you. All right, let's get going. So LordPE, very convenient, very fast. In many cases, if you don't have a lot of time, you infect your system, you dump it using LordPE. You can do some static analysis on it. You can do some strings. If you try to load the dumped file into OLEDebug or IDA Pro, they might complain, but they will still be able to do some parsing of the executable. But you may need to fix it up a little bit, and I'm going to show you how to perform a more surgical dump shortly. And how about I show that to you now? The tool that I typically use to dump packed programs from memory is actually an add-on to OLEDebug. It's an add-on called OLEDump. And OLEDump gives you a bit more control over how and when you dump the unpacked code. You see, when you do something in a very brute-forced way like LordPE, you really don't quite know in what state is the program when you're dumping it. Maybe it's still in the process of unpacking itself. It's not done yet, maybe, and there you go, dumping it from memory. So dumping from within OLEDebug using OLEDump gives you a bit more control, but it takes a little bit more work. And here's how we're going to do this. The general approach is the following. Let me show it to you on my screen, and then I'll give you a chance to experiment with it in your lab. So I'm going to kill the malicious process. By the way, you can kill it using LordPE if you want. It's called burn process. Or you could just use Task Manager. It doesn't matter. So I'm going to go into OLEDebug. And as before, I'm going to load the program from the Windows directory. But because I've already infected myself once, this program in Windows is now the packed version of the program. Here it is. Now, if I try to locate the string comparison function, if I try to locate meaningful strings, I won't find them. The program isn't visible to me. It's packed. All I can see here is the unpacking instructions. So how do I surgically dump the program at just the right time? The general process involves locating the end of the unpacking code and dumping it right after the unpacking code finishes executing. How to find the end of the unpacking code can be very tricky and very time-consuming, depending on how sophisticated the packer is. UPX is not very hard. To find the end of the unpacking code with UPX, all you got to do after loading the packed program into OLEDebug is scroll down a bit. And a bit more. And at some point, you're going to come across this area where the code will end. And all you're going to see is DB0, 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 DB0. That's the end of the unpacking code. Once you've located the end of the unpacking code, you would set a breakpoint there, just like we've done before. Right-click on it, breakpoint, toggle or press F2. And now that I've set the breakpoint at the end of the unpacking code, right where pop AD and jump is, I can run the program. What's going to happen? Well, the unpacking code is going to run, unpack the original program, place it somewhere in memory, and then pause. And now is the best time to dump the program because the unpacking code finished running, but the unpacked program has not yet had a chance to execute. So it's just in just the right state for me to dump it. So, yeah.
Just a question behind me, that determination. Like, is that, I mean, it's just a really well-known...
So Tim is asking, how do I know that this is the end of the unpacking code? And I purposefully kind of tried to slide it by you. So thanks for not letting me do that. So, some packers are well known. And if you just research them on the web, people will tell you where the unpacking code ends. UPX is certainly well known. And what you got to do is what I showed you. It's right on, right deep at pop at and a jump before pop AD. But, it can be harder. A lot of the more advanced packers will hide it somewhere in the middle, and they'll try doing some tricky jumps, and you're not quite sure which one is the jump that you care for. So I'm actually going to spend a fair bit of time on the last day of the class showing you more complex examples where things are going to be a lot harder to find. So we're going to revisit this topic on the last day of the class. Right now, we'll assume that this is a well-known packer. So it's easy for us to do this. On the last day, I'm going to show you much more complex examples and various heuristics for finding the end of the unpacking code. Yeah. Any questions, comments? All right. So in this case, it's pretty easy. And you know what? We'll be grateful for when things are easy for us, because in many cases, it is time consuming. Now that I found this, I set the breakpoint. I run the code, debug, run. And it almost instantaneously reaches the breakpoint. You see, it's paused. It's sitting at my breakpoint. I'm now almost ready to dump, but not quite, because I need to actually execute this last instruction. When OliDebug pauses, it is before executing the highlighted instruction. Hey, where do you think it's jumping, by the way? This jump to 4011CB. What do you think's there?
The entry point for the unpacked.
Yeah, it's the beginning of the unpacked program, right? It just finished unpacking itself. It put itself somewhere in memory. Now it needs to jump there to execute itself. So we want to allow it to take that jump. I don't need the breakpoint anymore, so I'm going to get rid of it. It's good practice to remove breakpoints that you don't need. So right-click on it, breakpoint, toggle, F2. All right. And now to take the jump, I can do step into or step over, F7 or F8. It's actually, in this case, the same thing. F7 and F8 allow you to execute one instruction. The only difference between step into and step over, the only time they're different is when you're about to execute a call. If you execute a call, you have a decision to make. Do you want to step into the call and start stepping through instructions within that function, or would you rather have OliDebug execute that call in one step and give you control right after the function returns? So if we were about to execute a call, then it would matter. F7 would step and drill into the function. F8 would execute a function in one step. In this case, it's not a call. It doesn't matter. I can do F7 or F8. So I'm going to press, F7, and I just jumped to 4011CB. And this is the unpacked program about to start running. In fact, if I scroll down there, I would be able to see some of those strings that we have seen before, like login and update and all those good strings. This is the unpacked program. Now I can dump it. And the best way to dump it is to go into plugins, OliDump, and say dump debugged process. Let me show it to you on my slides, a bit easier to see. When you click dump debugged process, OliDump is going to pop up this window that gives you a few choices about how you want to dump it. In most cases with OliDump, if you don't care, if you're in a hurry, just click dump and it's going to do the smart thing. So, dump debugged process, dump, I'm going to specify the file name, I'll call it tnnbtib dumped again, and It just dumped the program. And in fact, if I try to run the dumped program, guess what? It no longer crashes. That's because OliDump is more intelligent about dumping programs than Lord PE. So it will try to fix up the PE header if you invoke it at just the right time. Yes. So you're talking about another class where they told you that there was a different technique for finding, I guess, the end of an unpacking code so that you know when to dump it?
So basically just set a breakpoint wherever
Let me hold off answering this question until the last day of the class, because on the last day of the class, I'm going to show you several techniques like the one that you're talking about for how to find the end of the unpacking code in much more complex examples. There are a lot of different heuristics. There are a lot of tips and tricks, several tools that will help us. So hold off until the last day. I'm going to show you some other techniques like the one that you're mentioning. One more thing I wanted to show you. Now, I said that OliDump is pretty smart. In fact, the version of OliDump that I gave you is one of the better ones that are floating out there because of the intelligence that they have built into it to recreate the import segment. What's the import segment? Well, a Windows executable relies on external DLLs usually for some of the functionality. And when you dump a program, one of the things that is typically going to be corrupted is the import table. The dumped program won't know how to locate the DLLs that it relies upon. That's the import table. Well, if you look at the bottom of the window that OliDump presents to you, you see that by default, it'll try to rebuild the import table for you. It's got two different methods for how it does that. And the first one is usually the most reliable one, but if it doesn't work, hey, try the second one. So the version of OliDump that I gave you has this functionality. It's been improved. It's pretty good at automatically rebuilding the import table for you. That's why I really like OliDump better for dumping than Lord PE by itself. One more thing that I wanted to point out here when you look at this window, there's a field called entry point. Entry point is the address of the first instruction that Windows is supposed to execute when it begins running the program. Because there are a lot of instructions in the program. How does it know which one is the first one? It's not necessarily the one that is physically located at the top of the file. It could be somewhere in the middle of the file. How does Windows know where to begin execution? It looks in the PE header in a field called entry point, and that's the address of the first instruction to execute. In the packed program, that entry point is at the relative address 8760. That's where the unpacking code begins executing. But we've already unpacked it, so it makes no sense to run through the unpacking code again. That'll just crash the program. So that's why OliDump will try to automatically modify the endpoint field with a new address, in this case, 11CB. 11CB, why? Well, because that happens to be 11CB. That's the beginning of the unpacked code. So OliDebug is gonna, if you invoke it at just the right time, it'll automatically fill this into the right value so that when you dump the program, the entry point will point to the beginning of the unpacked code. Does that make sense to you? Let's try this. Let's try it. The instructions for doing this begin on page 32 in your second book. And what I would like you to do is to terminate the malicious process, then load the program from the Windows directory into OliDebug, scroll down to find the end of the unpacking code, set a breakpoint there, and go through the dumping steps that I just showed you. Then try running the program. It should run. Take a look at it. It'll run, but a little bit differently from what we have seen before. Let's continue. So those of you who dumped the program, notice that it runs, but it runs a little bit differently, right? You may have noticed that now if you look at the tasks, Process Explorer should show me the tasks. It is now running under a different file name from before, sysupd.exe. Where did we see sysupd? Do you remember? It was one of those strings that was protected using source search. So if you also if you looked at the network access, this program no longer tries to connect to malwarecores.sans.org. So we lost some information. What I think is happening here is that, remember, that there was this program sbconfig. that embedded our custom values directly into the executable, and that's not standard. That should not be possible. But it embedded this value, those values that we customized the program with, somewhere at the end of the file. When we dumped it from memory, we did lose that information that we embedded directly into the executable. So in most cases, dumping the program will preserve everything you need. But keep in mind that sometimes you might lose some information as we did before. I believe sysabd is the process name that the program uses as its default name if it doesn't know what else it's supposed to be called. So that's why we're seeing sysabd here. And you were wise to keep out for such anomalies like this one. If it's something that you did not see before, you did not anticipate, you might want to investigate why is it the case that it's called something different. So how else can we deal with packed programs? We talked about dumping them using lordpe and doing more surgical dumps using OliDebug together with OliDump. Well, sometimes you might also get lucky, and you might find that somebody has created a program to automate the dumping process for you. I thought I'd mention it to you just so that you know that these programs exist out there, but at the same time, we should not count on them actually working. Because most of these programs that I found, they don't work the way they should. It looks promising, but it turns out that the program was written, you know, without any debugging. It was written for one very particular version of one very particular packer. But here's an example where I was looking at an executable that turned out to be packed using a packer called spack, lsstat.exe. And I found an unpacker called spack-die. So you know what? I double-clicked on it, pointed it to the packed executable, and it said, no problem. The file seems to be unpacked successfully. Wonderful. Just saved me hours of work, or minutes of work. Look for these programs when you can find them. But realize that in many cases, they won't work, they won't be reliable, or maybe they won't exist. That's why I'm showing you how to do this sort of stuff manually. Yeah. Exactly, yeah. Yeah, a lot of this program will have Trojan functionality that'll do who knows what else to you. Yeah, if you do it in a closed environment, it's fine, unless it's something that's really trying to mess up your findings. So yeah, look for these programs. But again, be careful, don't trust them. Who knows the origin of these tools and what other hidden features they might have embedded into them.